So, hello everyone. It's 12 UTC already. This time I made it. Again, sorry for the hiccup last time. Public holiday. It's really nice feature that you don't have to check your email and your watch regularly. Yes. Natural consequence that you might miss some important meetings. So, I see Ben, Eduardo, Miriana, Alejandra are already here. So we still miss David, but he warned us that he might get stuck in the traffic. And we do not have Stephen on the call yet, but I hope he will join us a little bit later. So, oh yeah, Martin. We don't have Martin.
Katrina, Martin sent his apologies. He's on holiday.
Okay.
As well as Christelle. Yeah. You can see it in the notes.
Okay, it will be in the notes. Okay, so thanks. Thanks everyone. Let's start with the operating standards. Operating standards, it's a draft document prepared by MSSI team of ICANN.org, and I hope you all had time to read the document, but I'll try to walk you through it rather quickly. So first we have an introductory part where it speaks quite general terms about the background of the thing, values, and all these specific reviews. You can see here what's the basic idea of the reviews. So as you know, ICANN bylaws list these four reviews that had to be carried out periodically. Unfortunately, at this moment, they are carried out simultaneously, which makes it really difficult to handle for everyone. Hope we will be able to change that. Number three, it's competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice review. It doesn't have to be carried out so as regularly as other three, so with that one it's easier. But anyway, we're turning into a community of leaders. Okay, then about the planning phase. Just as current situation around SSR2 team showed, unfortunately it's not a good thing, well, at least so far it has proven not to be. It's quite difficult for the team to set up the scope, and sometimes they do not have this agreement on the scope. Okay, docs can be scrolled individually. Okay, it makes it a little bit more difficult for me to talk, but okay, you can scroll yourself. So, as you may remember, we did insist that we needed to have a scope to be able to select the team to handle the scope, basically, because we strongly believe, and by we, I mean CCNSO, probably was a spokesperson for the business. So in this respect, so we advocated the approach that the scope should be defined before the actual review takes place, before we announce call for applications for volunteers, and before we actually can select people to serve on these teams, because it's depending on the scope, we can define skill set and knowledge and some and everything that's needed to for the successful review. Okay. Then here in the operating standard, they introduce, in addition to the review, they introduce the way the scope is defined. So basically, 12 months before the actual review takes place, we, frankly, again, issue a call for volunteers and have a team that works specifically on the scope. It's not a prerequisite for serving on a specific review team to be on this scope-defining team, but of course it's very good if you work on the scope, and then you can serve also on this review team and implement whatever you plan to do during this scope setting exercise. And it basically all the process takes 12 months, and with all this public comment period for the before the actual scope is approved. Okay, so that's about this one. And then when the scope is defined, there's a this review. Again, as you remember, we have this, each SOAC may nominate up to 7 members, and then the chairs of SOACs, they have to decide first whether to go to the full review team, which is up to 21, or have a smaller team in case each or at least some SOAC nominate less than 3 people on the team. So 7 SOACs, 3 people you can... every SOAC is guaranteed to have 3 seats in the team. So together it's 21. If somebody nominates less than 3, like for example in case of ATRT3 review, we had only 1 volunteer seeking our endorsement from the CCNSO. So we appointed only 1 person. So it wasn't too difficult. Specifically because I think of a very highly skilled candidate. For others, it's not so easy, and my understanding is that nobody else appointed their representative to ATRT3 review team. And actually now, currently, SOAC chairs are working on trying to restart SSR2 team, which, as you again, no, was suspended by the board. So now we're trying to restart it as soon as possible. And naturally, it raised also questions about ATRT3 team. So probably we should learn our lessons and set the scope before we have the team. So, here we have call for volunteers and eligibility criteria for candidates. Then have some list of requirements, this initial requirements for those reviews, specific reviews. Selection, how SOAC chairs select the members of the team. We try to address this in more detail. I personally think it's not detailed enough, taking into account previous experience. As David rightly pointed out, perhaps we should also address this issue of suspension. Who can do that? And if it's okay, probably not who can do that, but what's in the case of in case the team is suspended. So what else? Okay, conflict of interest and everything. So basically that's what we have here, all these roles and responsibilities, how they select chairs and co-chairs, understanding of sub-teams. Again, probably not detailed enough. But actually that one interesting thing is that they do not speak about the charters of teams. I don't know if they're supposed to have those charters. Work plan, removal of review team members, which also raises some questions. Of course not, I think, if somebody removes a member, or at least they want to remove a member because of bad behavior or not showing up. If they remove this member, and if it's, for example, a member appointed by the CCSO, it's also the CCSO that has to have this opportunity to appoint another person to replace this one. So that's a very, you can see all the other parts in this document. It's not so easy to understand what's missing here. Therefore, maybe let's go to, we have some comments from Dave. Okay, Tim, could you please upload the other document? Yeah, there are comments so far on operating standard. I have some more comments in the printed document. I don't have it electronically, but I tried to go through the bylaws and see what bylaws actually say about the specific reviews and what we can conclude from the bylaws, what's necessary, but what has to be included in the operating standard. First of all, what we are supposed to do. It's work of SOAC chairs, what they need to have. That first, they run through selection process, and actually we do not have this understanding between the SOAC chairs, at least not at the moment. If you remember discussions that we had when we were working on this guideline on the specific review, how we select and appoint people to specific review. So if you remember that discussion, then we believed that even if we nominate more than seven people, then more than three people, we should be given the right to tell which three we believe need to be included in the team as those three mandatory seats that are guaranteed to, not mandatory, but those seats that are guaranteed to seats in itself. So we believe that we have to, we can say which three out of our four, five, six, or seven endorsed by the season, so which three should be definitely be on the team. So that was our belief, and I tried to defend this belief during the discussions with other SOAT chairs, but it turns out that this belief is not widely shared. Widely shared with other chairs because there is a requirement to ensure, or the chairs have to work on this diversity. And if we appoint seven people, and for diversity reasons, they see that some of those four remaining are better suited for diversity purposes. Then they believe that this probably should be chairs could maybe change those priorities. So that's one of the things. That's about the selection process, something that probably needs to be clarified in the operating standards, to make sure that there are no other thoughts on that. Then we have a conflict of interest for team members, but that's actually included in the current draft, but then there is nothing about conflict of interest chairs, for chairs who are, chairs, I mean, SOAC chairs who decide, maybe they also can be conflicted. And nothing about the conflict of interest for the liaison is appointed by the board. Maybe should talk about that as well. Maybe that's taken care of somehow differently, I don't know. But this is about, at least for me, it was also a question. Okay, again, decision-making practice is also in the bylaws. Independent experts, also mentioned in the bylaws. They did include about this expert advice, how to handle it. Probably it wasn't that bad in the current draft. That's basically everything I have to say about the bylaws and how bylaws speak about all those review teams, and which I thought all those aspects that I thought should be included in the operating standard. Here we also received comments from David. David also rightfully pointed out there are some spelling mistakes, quite a few of them. I was actually quite surprised to see so many spelling mistakes in the document. David, may I ask you to give us a brief summary of what you discovered or proposed?
Thanks, Katrina. It's David McCauley speaking. Excuse me. David McCauley speaking. I noted one misspelling, but I did see others, and I just ran out of time to get my comments down yesterday. But going through mine briefly, the first comment that seemed of concern to me was the language about when you look at the scope, addressing the requirements, the language in the bylaws is stated not simply in the nature of requirements, but there are discretionary reviews. And it struck me particularly because I head up the team that's looking at IRP, and IRP is one of the discretionary reviews every 5 years. And it just struck me that, that's really an important review, especially for the first cycle of reviews. Because it's a new IRP, it'll have a new standing panel of people that are not familiar with ICANN, and will be making rulings that carry precedential weight. So it just struck me that, in the scope setting exercise, there should be a record of how the requirements and how the discretionary reviews were addressed, so that the community can understand and maybe nudge them to review things that they may not want to review. So that's one. I also thought it might be better to state how a scope is approved rather than how it is rejected. I thought it just might be more efficient and more clear for the community. I'm just going through my comments with respect to call for volunteers. If the call for volunteers says to folks, hey, if you were chosen, you might have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. It just makes sense for me. Put the non-disclosure and agreement up front. It does two things. One is it requires ICANN to think through exactly what they want in a non-disclosure agreement, and it also gives people notice what it's going to be so they can say, gee, I'm not going to sign something like that. I won't apply. And it also gives the community a chance to say, that's ridiculous. That's much too broad. You need to narrow the scope of the non-disclosure agreement. So I just think it should be the non-disclosure agreement itself should be disclosed earlier in the process. Probably not a big deal, but I thought it was worth mentioning. Publishing the skills. In the skills section, I said including arbitration. Again, that harkens back to my interest in IRP. Probably not a huge deal. I thought let me just read aloud for a second. While the deliberation of the SOAC chairs may be in private, for transparency purposes, a summary should be prepared, published, et cetera. No later, the report will be compiled. And my question was, should the report be subject to review and comments by AC chairs prior to release? Should they get a chance to see what the summary said of what they did? Subteams. I just thought for archive purposes it would be nice to keep a record of what subteams did, even if it wasn't approved, so that we could, again, the community could have a full glimpse into what's going on. And obviously, I asked a question, should our review comments address the issue of the SSR2 team? It's obviously a big issue in the ICANN community right now. There's a lot that's said in the bylaws about removing directors, and they have a lot of protections. And in recent practice, the board has possibly removed people from review teams, because if you suspend a review team, there's a lot of people that may bolt. They may not hang around if it's just going to be in limbo for a long time. And so the idea of suspending a review team, it's happened. I think maybe we could address it somehow in our comments. Roughly, those are the high points, Katrina. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Very good comments. So are there any other comments? Because these are the two that we have here, but I know that Bart has a comment as well. Bart?
Thank you, Katrina. Kim, could you go back to the document itself? They're not included in this one, but you can see what is happening if you scroll along.
Excuse me.
So I'll start with page 4, and that's in the introduction. With respect to the research, it's more than what we discussed 2 weeks ago. It's more the scope of the operating standards. It's my understanding, at least, if you look at them, and why do you make these operating standards, that at least the review teams will adhere to the operating standards, and that's nowhere stated in this one. So even if you have operating standards and the review teams do not adhere to them, why have them? So that's one, and that's on page 4. That's more around the real scope and background of the operating standards themselves. What we discussed as well 2 weeks ago, what is the scope of the operating standards, to which, and it's David already alluded, is do they apply to the review teams, which ones and which reviews, and secondly, what is included, and if you link them to the ICANN bylaws, it's not clear from the document itself. So that's on page 5, and on page 5 is itself the final paragraph on the page. The scope of this is around the drafting teams. It's not clear why this method was chosen. The scope of the drafting team so consists of no more than 2 representatives. Why is this method chosen and not to for conducting this, and why not a different method? Especially if you look at, there is a different method for drafting the scope and for selecting, for example, the review teams as well. So I'll allude to that a little bit more. On page 7, if you, and this is an interesting one, is the drafting team, that this is the final sentence on the final paragraph on page 7, that you've got a drafting team drafting a scope, it will be adopted, and then the prior to adoption, the scope of the shall be limited again, and say to the mandatory scope provisions. So it's not it should be more precise, so that the scope of the review shall be limited to the, and what is included now, to the scope of the review of the scope provisions, but at least to the mandatory scope provisions, because if you look at the bylaws, you've got the more voluntary part and you've got the mandatory part. So it should be limited to the mandatory part if no scope is defined. Then the... I see, David, you've got your hand up.
Thanks, Bart. And I also was struck by that sentence and didn't comment on it because I read that language, shall be limited to the scope provisions. I read that as including mandatory and discretionary. And so so you're right. It does need more precision. There, we should make a comment there. And I read it just differently, and I said, okay, good. You know, if they don't get there, then they have to address everything. So more precision.
I would say the minimum. If they can't get there anywhere, then you should stick to the minimum.
Well,
yeah, but that's the point. At least...
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like that's not my role in life. Then the next one is the call for volunteers on the review teams itself. If you recall, say the GRC has had originally a different interpretation of the call for volunteers. There is language in the bylaws that states that the SOs and ACs shall nominate the members. And if you look at how it went and how the CCNSO and others got to, for example, the SSR2, but also to the ATRT3 review and to the RDS, there was a call for volunteers completely outside and only with some minimal information to the CCNSO Council and maybe to the community. It was sent out by ICANN.org, and then the CCNSO received a list of candidates to be nominated. And in some cases, some of these people were not known. There was no clear link with the CCNSO at all. Say the volunteer name that they wanted to be nominated by the CCNSO, and that's it. You could imagine that another procedure, like in the say the current or the guideline for the nomination for the specific reviews, is mentioned that say the call for volunteers and the whole nomination process itself is managed by the SO and AC. So then there is a clear link. The disadvantage of that approach is that sometimes you miss very good candidates who are reached through ICANN.org and not through the SOs and ACs. And there is an example of this. You have a few examples of this as well. But at least I think there needs to be a clear and good discussion about how the call for volunteers is currently structured and how it could be improved, and why this method and not another one. This is done, say this was, the current process is effectively a copy of the SSR2, and the SSR2 was on the, say the call for volunteers went out before the 1st of October, I think somewhere in July, August 2016, and then it had to match the new ICANN bylaws. So, and then that process and procedure was copied. So that's with respect to the call for volunteers and everything that flows from it. So that is on page 8 and 9. And one of the issues that comes up in that respect is if you would go to the top of page 10, for example, is the readiness and time to contribute to the review teams. One would expect, as in some cases the CCNSO has done in the past, a statement from an employer that this person is allowed to spend 10, 15 hours in a week or 2 weeks on a specific review, because that's what people are asked to do. So that's something as well. So just a statement, and it is nice to have, but very weak for these complicated and time-consuming efforts. And also in the protection of the members themselves. Then on page 12, again, review team selection, prospective nominate. This is... say prospective members nominated by the supporting teams and advisory committees. This is the language used more or less in the bylaws, and going back to the call for volunteers, how this is all organized is it's difficult to pass, I would say, with the call for volunteers. SOAC nomination process, so 2.7, similar. It's probably needs far more discussion than, or that would be my suggestion. It needs far more discussion with the community how they want to organize this. And then 2.8, the way I read this, but look, this is almost more than 2 weeks ago, 2.8, it's almost a double analysis of the skills and diversity requirements and the analysis. And so I'm talking about the based on nominated SOs and ACs, they do their diversity and skills analysis. And then again, it's done by ICANN.org. So, you can analyze until you weigh an ounce, to put it in Dunglish. 2.8 AC selection process. I think one would expect an order of choices, decisions. The first one, because that will drive the final outcome, the first one is it needs to be clear whether all SOs and ACs want to participate in a particular review. Secondly, do they all want to fill their particular slates? Because if one of the two is no, then you can already see that the SOs and AC chairs need to start discussing what are we going to do with the three per SOAC. And then you can go into the appointment of max three SOs and what you do with the non-filled slates. If you structure it this way, say, gathering the information, the process will be far more easier for the SOs and AC chairs to complete in a reasonably timely manner. Bottom page 13, unclear, and maybe, and this is, I know that was discussed at some point by the GRC. The question is, are the SOs and AC chairs empowered to override the suggestion of the SOs and ACs? So if the SOs and ACs nominate 3 to 7 slaves, as the CCNSO has done, do the SO and AC chairs are they empowered, or will they be empowered, to override the suggested slate by the CCNSO? So, and that's not clear from the language either. Scrolling down, number 15, page 15, number 3.4. 3.4, conflict of interest, and this is more around the structure of statement of interest, and it's also about the non-disclosure statement. If you look at the structure, say the conflict of interest is already probably of relevance for the SO and AC chairs and the SO ACs themselves, as well as the non-disclosures. And you would expect that it would over, say, would look at the whole process from SSRs or from, specific reviews and not be, and so if you look at the way the document is structured, it is a bit per phase, and say the conflict of interest, statement of interest are, say, looking at all phases of these documents. For example, conflict of interest and statement of interest, is that relevant for the drafting team as well, or isn't it? And it's unclear from the document. And you would expect a template and mechanism how to change these templates if you have a statement of interest, because or expect statement of interest, because if you look at the current practice, the CCDSO doesn't have a statement of interest due to the fact that there is the assumption that people running through the CCDSO do have a relation, working or otherwise, with CCTLDs, and that's the main, and that's probably the only and main interest. If you look at the CCNSO or the GNSO, especially to some of the constituencies, there is another expectation, and with the at large, it's also clear that is not their full-time job. So there are different needs, and the same is true with government officials. They everybody knows their role in life because they're government officials. So it's, say, the expectations around statement of interest are different, and this was one of the issues that came up through the CCWG and CWG. So transparency requirement, maybe it's just me, but say the meetings must be conducted in a transparent manner. Why not make it more concrete and get rid of transparent? It's in the eye of the beholder, in the sense of if you describe what you will do with the meeting, then that should result in a transparent meeting. And it must be conducted in a transparent meeting. Yeah, it's who assesses this? So just tell them. So it's that type of language. Scrolling down to one or two more. Oh yeah, scrolling down to page 19. This is to do with the terms of reference of specific reviews. Again, and there is this link between the draft of the scope of a review, the scope as defined in the bylaws, and then the terms of reference. In principle, the co-chairs are selected, and the review team shall draft the terms of reference. How do these terms of reference relate to the scope drafting and to the bylaw drafting? So that's unclear. It's listed a little bit in what is done, but are they allowed to deviate from the scope of the drafting team? That needs to be clear, clearer. Once, that shall be provided to. And again, unclear this, that they need to submit the terms of reference to the board. Again, this is a procedural step, probably needs to be clarified as well. And what else do I have? Here we go. Oh yes, the decision-making procedures. 3.20. That's an interesting one. If you look at the designations included, they're very related, and it's the method used in I would say, GNSO policy working groups, PDPs. There was an extensive discussion at the time when the CCWG was created and the CWG was created under leadership of Becky Becky Burr to change it, and I do not understand why they have not chosen the CCWG decision making procedures and or the CWG decision making procedures, because that was supported by all participating, and this is a result from that. The whole mechanism of operating standards, etc., is a result from the CCWG and its way of working. So that's something to designate. Say some of the this is strongly, and that was one of this is strongly going into a constant checking and voting mechanism. That was one of the main concerns at the time. And but we need to check again, and I don't mind checking again about the discussions or the CCWG when of that drafting team and the results of it. I know it's different, and say the CCWG is more aligned and in with the CCNSO way of working. As I think this, then the confidentiality disclosure framework, again, this is 103.21. Again, this is one of those items that overlooks the whole process and not just limited to the to one specific phase. That's something else. I forgot what it was about. The decision making around the proposal itself, again, this is changes to the scope of the review, so that's 3.22. Again, you could look at the CCWG, etc., as a mechanism. Check. Minority dissent, and this is, it relates to the, again, to the decision-making, etc. Why include it here, of if a minority dissent? Implementation, amending, that's about it, I had. So, and that was from an initial read. Thank you, Katrina.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bart. Some comments on what you just said, last point, for example, about decision-making. If we look at the current process or the problem issues with FSR2, the leadership of the team said there was a general agreement, majority agreed to that, and then at the same time I hear from the team say, well, we never voted. So how was that recorded? Probably we should also address that part, that all those decisions must be somehow recorded. Evaluation by the staff, it's also quite a tricky issue. Of course, it's non-binding from one side, but from the other side, I was really shocked to read their evaluation of our candidate to the ATRT3 team. And they said, okay, something like partly qualified or something, and if Demi is partly qualified, then the question is who is fully qualified. Somebody who has been around for so long, participated in ATRT2, being on the ICON board and really very, very knowledgeable about everything, and then they just come up with an allegation like that. It was really quite shocking. So I would really distrust their assessment, but again, it's non-binding. But again, then what to do? About chairs being able to override decision by SOACs, oh, that's a really good question. Oh, from one side, that's what the bylaws tell the chairs to do. On the other hand, I think that, I hope at least that they will agree that diversity requirements should not stand in the way of excellence and experience and real expert being on the team. So as one of the co-chairs put it, why to have a diverse group of 21 people when only 7 will do the work anyway. So that's about that one. And then, yeah, there is a tricky thing about non-disclosure. As one of the team members on SSR2 team, he actually refused to sign an NDO. NDA, and his rationale was, how can I sign a non-disclosure agreement when we have this review that is supposed to be transparent and open? And that's, again, the thing about the transparency of the meeting. So can they, if the meetings have to be transparent, how can they be... how can they be, how to balance this non-disclosure with transparency and openness of open nature of our reviews. So, those are comments from the team. I propose that the rest of us, again, goes through the document and submit comments by Friday. You know, next week we're meeting with Larissa from MSSI team when we will try to discuss the operating standards and the way we submit our comments. I'm trying to get some feedback from other policy chairs on their plans with respect to the comments on operating standards. It's been more than a week now, but I haven't received any feedback. So hopefully they will respond soon. So the call is on Wednesday, 13 December. So if you can join at 3 UTC, it would be great. If not, well, what can I say? I'm very sorry. Bart, I saw your hand was up.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that it's on say, Wednesday, but it still needs to be confirmed because Larissa is still out of the office. But I'll inform you as soon as I have a confirmation.
Okay, thank you. So we'll try to talk to MSSI team to see how we can proceed with that. So anything else anyone would like to say on operating standards? Okay, David, I hope you can make it. Good. So we will let you know about the call details. So that's about the first agenda item. We spent 50 minutes on that, but that's really important, and I hope that we can move forward with that pretty quickly. I will shut up about operating standards. Let's move to next agenda item. It's rejection action guidelines. Still talking about that, Kim, may I ask you to open Google Doc? I have some comments there, and I hope that others also have. Yeah, well, I made it through half. Okay, so slightly less than half of the document. Kim, now I'll have to ask you to move forward. The first comments are on page 4. I'll just briefly run through my comments and if we see any other comments. Yeah, okay, first one. It said seasonal councillor appoints one of the councillor. I added councillors to serve as and remove the brackets. That's my proposal here. Next, a comment on should be sent. Yeah, I think we agreed to have a role account. Maybe we could mention it here as well, not to talk about. Then for me, as a non-native speaker, it was quite difficult to understand the rejection action manager will, but not limited to. So I propose change the language, the rejection action manager will inter alia attend the conference call and so on. But yes, yeah, surely native speakers should do the editing. Can we move forward next? Next page. Yeah, here we have, yeah, I just, first, not rejection manager, rejection action manager, and use the same language as we used before. Here, of the A format, I can public meeting, just to make sure we're consistent in the language we use. And here, also propose to, say that rejection action manager will be the chair of this committee and will be responsible for organizing the work of the committee and for all communication between committee and CCTOD community. And actually, if we move to the next, next page, slightly again changed. Change the wording here because just to make sure it's not a passive voice. Just to make sure that, one of the reasons I started amending these tables of responsibilities was to make sure that we have clear responsibilities here. Bart, I see you have a hand up.
Yes, it's regarding the A format of the meeting. If you would look at the ICANN website, but also to other SOs and ACs, the people are moving away from A format as a sentence and B format and C format. I know the B format is now the policy forum. I think the C or the A format is community forum, and the C format is
fine. Yeah. We can use any, but the thing is that under 3.2 we have of the A format ICANN public meeting, and under 3.3 we have another wording. So any would do, but just use the same wording. I do not insist on the A format.
Yeah.
I'm just insisting on consistency. Yeah.
Understood.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. Page 6, on the last paragraph, no later than, I don't know, on the 20th or at the 20th, definitely would suggest that we have no later than, not just precise number. Okay, next page, another comment there. Again, for me as a non-native speaker, if I read who are considered an individual according to Annex D, Section 2.2, I'd say that it's who are considered individuals according to our procedures, not Annex D. Annex D just speaks about individuals, and here we try to identify how we understand, how we interpret the word individual. So I wouldn't say it's more considered individual according to Annex B, but according to our, for the purpose of our own guideline, if you know what I mean. No? Any comments on that? No? Okay, if not, then yeah, under 4.2.2.1, first it's not rejection, access deficiency, even though I like it, rejection action. Rejection action, and here is something that wasn't entirely clear to me. Rejection action petition to be submitted to the Chiefness of Council, even though the next one, at 4.2.2.3, we have upon receipt of a rejection petition, the rejection action manager will promptly inform the Chiefness of Chair, Chiefness of Council, which clearly means that the petition is received by rejection action manager, not the Chiefness of Council. So, so I think it's all from me, but on 4.3.3 there's comment from Mirjana, procedures rejection action supporting decision of participant. Yeah, I think I agree with her comment that this should be rephrased. We should not use three regarding rejection action supporting decision of participant. Actually, I've read that RE does not mean regarding it in response or something, but I know that many use RE as regarding. But probably, yes, I agree with Mirjana, it shouldn't be used in the title. Yeah, well, I'm still going through the rest of the document. So far, that's all from me. Anything else from others? Yeah, so I see that in the chat window, David promises to go through the document. Good. What about the others, Stephen?
Good morning, Stephen Durek, for the record. I was about to throw the glossary and some other stuff onto this and to go in and put in parenthetically reference to bylaws as was asked for. So I'm wondering if I can take this back, take the pen back on this one for a week or so, if that sits with the group.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Stephen, sorry, Katrina, Stephen, could you have a look at, say, before going into the glossary, because this is a reasonable, not a really substantial, but check whether this is still in line with your understanding of Annex D, etc. I think before we go into the real deal,
I will do that as
a first step.
I will do that as well.
Yeah, before you go into the glossary, because, say, once we got that in order, then it's easier, say, then we got those stable documents, then it's easy to do the glossary, et cetera, by pulling it out. But if you do it in the meantime, say, my sense is, we relatively close now to a description of the procedures, unless you see any, and then we can go to the glossary, make it easier in language, etc. But that we capture and we have the structure in place that everybody is comfortable with. That's probably the main step.
All right.
And from from your work, you got the best insight into it.
Thank you. I think we're really close from what I've seen, what I read, and what I started making notes on. I did not apparently have this particular version, which I'm happy to see. I think we're really close. I want to put in the annotations to, you know, specific references back to bylaws per se where they're relevant, and then flush out the glossary. And I think at that point we're really pretty close to getting this one wrapped up. I don't see any major thing on this that says we're not close to getting it wrapped up. Your thoughts on that, Bart?
No, I'll ask you because I redrafted it on the basis of the previous discussions, and I shared this 2 weeks ago, and it would be nice that we at least have a stable sense or a sense of the structure that is right and the specific language, and then we can refine it a little bit, like what Katrina is doing right now and what, say, the native English speakers need to do, and then we can fill in the glossary. That would be my proposal as a sequence. And we could start filling in the different sections around the roles and responsibilities as well, and pull them together at the end, as we discussed some time ago. So I don't mind doing that.
I agree completely. I wouldn't mind working on this for a week or so now that I have some time to do so, and just do a thorough review versus my interpretation of Annex E, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you for pulling this together, by the way, Bart, and combining them as we discussed per your flow diagram. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, so thank you. So we agree that we will go through the document, make our comments. Stephen also has a final look to see if everything is according to the bylaws, Annex D. We have our next call on 15th January. Sorry, there are no more calls this year. Apart from the call on this when we discussed this operating standard, but that means that we need to work really hard offline and online to make sure that we can submit this rejection action guideline to the council early next year, or maybe even we can manage it to do it as a New Year's gift to everyone, to the council at least, so that we can then post it for public comment to the community and have it adopted as soon as possible. Bart, I see your hand is up.
Yes, regards the priorities. I don't know when we agreed the public forum operating standard closes. That's sometime, I believe, in January as well. And so it's more a matter depends on the outcome of the conversation with Larissa next week. But I don't know if you want to submit a public statement as a submission to the public forum and use this as well, because that will be take some time as well to proceed, and where there is probably some discussion needed with the TRC as well. So do you want to do both in parallel, or you have priority with
I'm afraid we have to do both in parallel. I think that, and I agree with David, it's January 15, when public comment period for standard closes. But I hope that we can actually, with support from other SOACs, we could maybe extend it. Just so to make sure that we take into account all the lessons we learned recently. But that's just an idea. I don't know if it's going to work. But I think we can submit our comments and maybe even request that we need some more, another public comments period on this one. Bart?
Apologies, an old hand.
Okay. So I think we have to work on parallel, but it means that we have to put aside all the other things that we were working on. And actually, I forgot to mention one more thing regarding our guideline on electing members to specific reviews. As it turned out, when we exercised it with appointing our members to SSR2, what we do, the councillors vote on those who ask for our endorsement. Top three go nominated, but at the same time, we have no mechanism to not nominate those who seek. Meaning that, for example, if six people ask for our endorsement, we all vote, and everyone who receives at least one vote gets endorsed. We have no mechanism to say, okay, this one received too few votes and should not be nominated. At least that's my understanding of the current wording we have in the guideline. So maybe that will need to be changed as well. But that's not at the moment. This is something that we will need to address at some point. So I don't have any more comments. Our working items. Now we work on these two things, comments to operating standards and rejection action. Just we concentrate on that. Any other comments, any other suggestions, anything? Everybody knows what to do. By Friday, please submit your comments, if you haven't done that yet, to operating standards. And, yeah, keep working on rejection action. So read those who haven't participated actively in writing, read and see if you understand what's written, if you understand the process. It is complicated, yes, but at the same time, well, it's not, it's nothing that we wouldn't be able to understand. Complicated, but manageable. So it's really very digested, let's say, digested specifically for everyone who hasn't ability to understand the legal iconish in the Annex D. So, any comments, anything? No, if nothing, then thank you very much. Thanks for your participation in discussion. Thanks for your contribution to the work of the GRC. See you, or hear you, hopefully next week if you can make it. Definitely on January 15th. We will exchange documents on the mailing list to make sure that everybody is on track, everybody can participate and comment on, contribute to the work. So thank you very much, and have a nice rest of the day. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.